The following Dharma talk was presented at Common Ground Meditation Center, Minneapolis, Minnesota, as part of the monthly Guest Dharma series.
I'd like to welcome everyone. This past week, I've been doing quite a bit of reflection on forgiveness, and you were all with me during that time, so I appreciate your support of my practice this past week, and I'm really very grateful for the opportunity to speak to you tonight about the practice of forgiveness. Forgiveness, the practice of forgiveness is part of the loving kindness or metta practice in this tradition. And I did my first 10-day retreat in 1987, and it was with a teacher whose name is Goenka. Many of you have probably heard of him. And he had a very strict way of teaching. You didn't do any stretching or walking meditation or anything, you just sat. And then at the end of the, on the 10th day, 9th or 10th day, they introduced metta practice. And I remember coming home from that retreat, and there was a friend of mine's mother was at my house, and she was a person who she sort of pushed my buttons. I just didn't really like her very well. And I came in and sat down, and we had this wonderful conversation, and this just felt completely connected and had a wonderful, enjoyable time, and there was just this love that was just flowing in the room between us, and wow, at you know, the combination of the Vipassana practice and the metta practice is obviously quite a powerful thing. So then Goenka had suggested that at the end of your sit each day that you would spend 5 minutes doing metta. So I endeavored to do this and failed miserably. I couldn't, 5 minutes, I couldn't do it, you know? And so then I think after a while I just sort of forgot about it. And then when I would go to retreats and there would be metta practice, it would always come in the afternoon, which seemed to be the worst time of day for me at retreats. And again, I was just like, there was no loving kindness that was flowing during those practices. So then I went to the Bhavana Society, and Bhante Gunaratana, who teaches there, had a metta practice that he did and that he recommended you did at the beginning of your sit, each time you sat, to sort of bring the mind into a wholesome state. And so when I got home, once again, I tried to make this part of my practice, and just on my own, it just wasn't something that I could incorporate into my daily practice. So, but one of the things that really struck me at the Bhavana Society was I read about the about right effort, and this really impressed me. And so, I just like to share Bhante Gunaratana's statement about right effort. It's the sixth step of the Eightfold Noble Path. The Buddha explains more precisely how to direct our efforts, breaking the process down for us into four parts, First, with strong determination and energy, we do whatever we can to prevent the arising of painful, unwholesome states of mind such as resentment, jealousy, or greed. Since we are not yet enlightened, however, some negative mind states are going to sneak in despite our best efforts. We then make the second effort, arousing ourselves to overcome whatever unwholesome states have taken hold. Third, we replace those states with wholesome ones, such as loving thoughts, ideas of generosity, or feelings of compassion. Finally, we exert effort to cultivate further these pleasing, wholesome mental states. The more we make these efforts, the more clear and free of pain our minds become, and the more happiness we experience as the natural result. So that just hearing those words really planted a seed in my mind. And even though I wasn't able to follow those instructions, I just knew that it was very, it was a very important thing. So a couple of years ago, I went on a Santikaro retreat at the Christine Center in Wisconsin. And there was just a lot of the hindrances were arising. There was aversion and there was doubt, and I just seemed to be really spinning in that. So finally, I just sort of got a hold of myself, and I said, you know, I really need to apply these exertions. So I really started practicing with all my mind and heart, and I found it to be that it really was possible to that those with effort those mind states did subside, and then was able to make the effort to continue with the loving kindness. And so when I got home, then I, once again, I started to incorporate the loving kindness into my sitting practice. And each time I would sit in the morning, in the evening, I would spend some time doing the metta practice. And so that was a couple of years ago now. And I've really found it to be very beneficial. So this year, New Year's, I went back to and did a retreat with Shinzen Young. I hadn't done a retreat with him for 6 years. And originally, when I went to Los Angeles, it was at a retreat. At the end of a retreat, I realized that that's what I wanted to do, and that seemed like the beneficial thing for me to do was to go and to be the administrator for the Vipassana Support Institute. And it was quite, I lived in a rural area of Minnesota for a number of years, but this was the first time that I had ever lived away from Minnesota. So a little Minnesota girl going to Los Angeles, it was quite a big step. I got in my car and drove across country, and actually the first stop was Shinzen. Is a sun dancer in the Native American tradition. And so that was the beginning, was to attend this sun dance where people dance for 4 days without food or water in the sun. It's quite an amazing ceremony. So I just sort of felt like I had been transported to another planet. And so then And of course, I was really quite a shy person, and to be like with my teachers, was like kind of like, oh, how did I think this was a good idea? But so Shinzen and I drove back to Los Angeles together, and got back to and we the three of us were going to live together in Los Angeles, and it was. It was quite amazing because Shinzen's partner, Shirley, was just sort of the she's a very strong person, and for whatever reason, she was my button pusher. And I had never been in quite such a situation where, I was just, constantly being being challenged. So I but fortunately, I was practicing. Doing meditation practice, and of course that was kind of the whole focus of our endeavor. And so I kept trying to the best of my ability to be accepting and to be open and to be aware and mindful. But it was a very challenging situation. Shirley also was in chronic pain, and it was just very difficult to be in a situation to see someone who was suffering that much every, it was an everyday thing to be with that. So after 8 years, I sort of hit my wall, and I decided to come back to Minnesota. And I didn't leave too gracefully. I was rather angry and resentful at that point. And but I also came. Part of the reason I came back was because my mother had been diagnosed with cancer, and so I came to take care of her. And it was really interesting because with my mother, we had a cordial relationship, but I had never felt like a real closeness and appreciation for her. And during this time of her illness, that really grew, and it was just very grateful for the opportunity to have been able to be with her during that time. And after that time, it was just kind of, I just sort of clearly saw that, my whole, all of my anger and resentment that I had felt towards the situation in Los Angeles was, really just that there was no one to blame in that situation, that Shirley wasn't to blame, I wasn't to blame, and Shinzen wasn't to blame. It was just the circumstances. And really, I came to see that it was the circumstances that I had needed to really soften me. And so there was just, there was complete forgiveness on all of our parts for whatever harm we had caused each other and caused ourselves. And so I went to Santa Barbara over the New Year's holiday for a retreat that Shinzen leads there every year, and Shirley was there as well. And it was just, and I just can't describe the feelings of love and connection, and you know, just really none of that, zero of that resentment, irritation, anything. I mean, it's just completely gone. And so I think that even though I hadn't specifically been doing the specific forgiveness practice, I think that that this practice is kind of a practice of forgiveness in a way, because we're constantly letting go and constantly trying to accept things as they are, and that is a form of forgiveness. So I think that if we stick with this practice, over time, we just get to see more and more the deep benefits that come from our intention to become free. So I left the retreat. I had flown into Los Angeles, and I had to take a cab to get back to the bus to take back to Los Angeles Airport. And I got into the cab, and Al, the cabbie, says, looks at me, he says, "I have one word for you, forgiveness." I said, "Oh." So, and he went on to tell me about how he had been an alcoholic for many years, and that finally he had seen that he needed to change. And so he had become sober and joined AA. And then after a while, he thought that he'd done quite a few things in Santa Barbara that he wasn't too proud of. So he thought that perhaps he should move to New Jersey. But then he thought, no, that really wasn't going to be helpful. So he decided to stay in Santa Barbara and face whatever came up in terms of his past. And so he says, "Now, if someone gets into my cab and they say, 'Oh, it's you, I remember, blah, 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 blah,' and he says, 'This rides on you.'" this week when I was doing some reading on forgiveness, the Inquiring Mind did an issue on reconciliation. And in that issue, there are quite a number of teachers who tell about various situations that that they've healed through the practice of forgiveness. Yvonne Rand talked about reconciling with her alcoholic mother after her death. And James Barras talked about how he had had a son who, with a girlfriend back in the 60s, and had been too afraid to be part of that, to have a relationship with his son and this woman, and how 20 years later his son had contacted him, and how there had been this incredible forgiveness that had taken place. There was a story about the the Nez Perce Indians who had moved back to their former land in, I believe it was in Oregon, and how there had been this incredible reconciliation with the white ranchers, and how the tribal chief had said that had really expressed this total forgiveness that they wanted to be good neighbors, and it included that they had to deal with the balance of how the water in the area was going to be used, which was a very big deal. So I just found as I was reading these things that, you know, just many times tears would come to my eyes, and I just really felt, you know, my heart softening as I read about these practices of forgiveness. So I think it's a very powerful practice, and I think oftentimes, you know, that it's easy to sort of slide over things and sort of get on to the next thing rather than to take a look. But I think it's extremely helpful to reflect from time to time, and you know, just look and see if there are you know, things that are held from the past that need to be healed. And so the practice is that we ask for forgiveness for harm that we have done. We forgive the harm that others have done to us, and we forgive ourselves, which is a very important part of the practice. To be open to the harm that we've caused ourselves, and to be willing to examine that and let it go. Okay, just sharing Salzburg has a really excellent description of this practice. I'd just like to take a moment to read a little bit of what she has to say about it. This is from her book, Loving Kindness, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness. When we are held prisoner by our own past actions or the actions of others, our present life cannot be fully lived. The resentment, the partially experienced pain, the unwelcome inheritance we carry from the past, all function to close our hearts and thereby narrow our world. The intention of forgiveness meditation is not to force anything, or to pretend to anything, or to forget about ourselves in utter deference to the needs of others. In fact, it is out of the greatest compassion for ourselves that we create the condition for an unobstructed love, which can dissolve separation and relieve us of the twin burdens of lacerating guilt and perpetually unresolved rage. It is more difficult to forgive than not to forgive. Political leaders seem to rely on this fact. It may be much easier to unite people with a bond of common hatred than with shared love. It's not so easy to access the place inside of which we can forgive, which can love. Remember, to be able to forgive is so deep a letting go that it is a type of dying. We must be able to say, I am not that person anymore, and you are not that person anymore. The reflection is done in three parts: asking forgiveness from those who have harmed, offering forgiveness to those who have harmed you, and offering forgiveness to yourself. Sit comfortably, close your eyes, let your breath be natural. Begin with the recitation, silent or not. If I have hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask their forgiveness. If different people, images, or scenarios come up, release the burden of guilt and ask for forgiveness. After some time, you can offer forgiveness to those who have harmed you. Don't worry if there's not a great rush of loving feeling. This is not meant to be an artificial exercise, but rather a way of honoring the powerful force of intention in our minds. We are paying respects to our ultimate ability to let go and begin again. We are asserting the human heart's capacity to change and grow in love. In the end, we turn our attention to forgiveness of ourselves. If there are ways you have harmed yourself or not loved yourself or not lived up to your own expectations, this is the time to let go of unkindness towards yourself because of what you have done. You can include any inability to forgive others that you may have discovered on your part in the reflection immediately preceding. That is not a reason to be unkind to yourself. Continue this practice as part of your daily meditation and allow the force of intention to work in its own way, in its own time. So today when I was making a few notes in this book, and this is a book that a friend of mine in Los Angeles gave to me, a journal, and it has little quotes in it, and I haven't picked this up for, I don't know, probably 10 years, 8 years, something like that. So I'm writing, I turn the page, on the top of the page it says, I forgive myself. It's kind of like the universe was just really cooperating with me on this forgiveness front. And I'd just like to share one more thing before I close, and people are welcome to share. So today I was, when I was thinking about forgiveness, I remembered something that I hadn't thought of for quite a long time. And it was about my mother. And when I was raised a Catholic, and I have, there are 5 children in our family. And my parents didn't have a lot of money. My father was a blue-collar worker, and although they were quite wonderful, because I never felt like we didn't have enough, ever. But I know that, you know, in reflection, my mother and my father made some sacrifices so that all of us attended Catholic grade school and Catholic high school. And then all of us ended up not continuing to be Catholics as adults. And I had never really reflected on that as, how deeply my mother must have felt hurt by that, because I was very much into establishing my own thing at that time. But reflecting today, I remembered her, something she had said, told me one time. This was quite a few years later, after not having been a Catholic anymore for quite a number of years. She said that her friend had asked her, you know, like how she could bear this, and that shouldn't she just like refuse to have a relationship with us until we came to our senses or something? And she said, no, she said, that relationship with my children is terribly valuable to me. It's incredibly important. And doing that would just, exponentially increase the pain of the situation. And when I reflected on that today, it was just like just a lot of gratitude for her wisdom. And so I was really grateful for having this this opportunity to reflect on forgiveness this week. And I did. I also found it was very interesting. I hadn't really been so aware of this before. But on looking at various things from the past, there was also an incredible gratitude that that I felt this week as well. So I think that it's that kind of thing of by accepting what is difficult, you also see more clearly what's beautiful as well and beneficial. So I'll stop here, and I'd just be happy if anyone has anything that they would like to share regarding their experience with forgiveness. And one of the things I thought of too in regards to what I recalled about my mother today was that it's, and also reading the articles from the Inquiring Mind, that it's really wonderful to have these examples and these role models of, you know, the benefits, but also that it's important to start where we're at. And to, you know, if there, you know, we can also learn from the difficult situations where people have chosen not to forgive or not to be reconciled. We can learn from that, you know, by looking at the pain of those situations. And opening ourselves up to that as best as we can. So, anyway, if anybody has any comments or questions or anything that they like to share, that
When you were talking about the resentments you had in California, did you do active forgiveness practice for that, or do you just think your practice in general kind of helped you let go, or what was?
I didn't do a formal forgiveness meditation around that, although I did reflect on the situation, and but I think that that was sort of more grace, the grace of the practice.
Probably from all that Catholic schooling.
You know, that was in that particular situation.
To kind of follow up on that, because what I heard you say when you were talking was, in that situation, once you saw there was no one to blame, and what helped you to see there was no one to blame? Because that was a change, a substantial change.
Well, I think one day I was driving my car, and I had this thought about being in, I don't know if somebody kind of got close to me or something like that, and I had this thought of being in an accident, and sort of projected, you know, what the reaction would be. And it kind of suddenly really occurred to me that blaming and that would do no help, nothing. And then it was just generalized. I mean, having that realization, it was just kind of like generalized that, you know, blaming just it doesn't help anything. It doesn't resolve anything. It just keeps ill will spinning. So I guess that must have been from practice too. Sneaks up on you. Yeah, I mean, that's an important point that, you know, we can't change. I mean, the past, we can't change. Those actions are already happened. But we can see, you know, we can examine and reflect on those, see what our motivation was, feel the feelings that are still generated as a result of those thoughts, and then choose to make whatever amends we are able to make, or if that's appropriate to the situation. But yeah, you're right. But I mean, it's kind of like we can't, in a sense, we can't undo the situation. So in terms of the amends, it's kind of, do what we can do now. Is there anything else that comments or questions? Yeah, Mark.
Some years back, I found a postcard. I think it was from the Sun Merchandising. It shows a man, sort of a 1950s style, dressed in a man, hat, and a trench coat, he's driving a car, very friendly. And then big words, it says, "Resentment is suicide." And I saw that one. Because I think that is, I mean, my own experience. Though it's easy to not be aware of that, I think ultimately it's so true. When I look at the resentments of my life, I have suffered so deeply from those. And there is that thing, I think, where sometimes we're deluded into thinking, this is going to show that they're going to get it, you know, by feeling badly for something. You know, but my tendency to say, I think, probably suffered the greatest from this thing. And it just seems like so much wasted effort. So much effort that could be put towards good purpose in the world, lives, and even towards those people who are resent. You know, this could be on to them, and you know, because something was said to recognize the suffering, to recognize what they went through. And I think there is a great deal of base of forgiveness and understanding. I got shirts that they had, and some understanding as well. And when I understand, I can let go so much.
Thank you.
So
But I also know that that's all it only needs a true hand in the end, I know, but I just, I'm glad there was no recognition that it is really difficult to cut. And then I naturally, I
reminds me, like you two have just said, I think it's in Sharon's book, that it always struck me as useful for me to reflect on, which is when forgiving others, especially like when I would do the formal practice and it come to that place, it's time to forgive other people. And I think it's Sharon, but some teacher would say something like that this act of generosity of forgiving another, it's really an act of generosity to ourselves. And I think the phrase that I would repeat, and I think it was suggested to repeat something like this, which is basically something like, I'm tired of holding up this resentment. I'm ready to let go of holding this. I'm ready to let go of this hate or this resentment. And to really focus on like an act of compassion or act of generosity toward ourselves of letting it go first, even before we can really see it as a gift to the person who's harmed us, which is to say, I don't want to be that person anymore who holds the resentment. And that's been helpful, that I don't have to be that person.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.